men choose the path they walk.
Listening to KBOO Portland, a minute before 10 o'clock. Good morning. We're about an hour away from our special as we travel with KBOO volunteer Christopher Francisco on the Leonard Peltier Justice Ride from Oregon to Washington, D.C. That, again, in about an hour here. Coming up next, though, we've got a special Best of Flashpoints presentation, and that'll feature interviews with Cheryl Angel of the Rosebud Nation and Tom Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network, and that is coming up. It is 10 o'clock. Hey, thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
Give to KBOO today during our end-of-year match. Wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a new member and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
Welcome to the Best of Flashpoints for the week of November 18th, 2016. My name is Mike Biggs. Today on the program, we feature a pair of interviews from our week's worth of shows from Standing Rock in North Dakota. We'll hear from Cheryl Angel of the Rosebud Nation about the powerful role women are playing in the resistance. Then we'll hear a rare interview with Tom Goldtooth. Goldtooth is the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network and a key organizer at Standing Rock. All this straight ahead on the Best of Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Best of Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We kick off today's show with an interview from Monday's program with Cheryl Angel of the Rosebud Nation about the powerful role women are playing in the resistance at Standing Rock.
I'm a member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. I live in South Dakota on the Rosebud Reservation, and prior to coming to Cannonball, we had successfully kept Keystone, the pipeline, at bay. And it took a gathering of several organizers to defeat the permit, and ultimately we had convinced Obama to deny the transcontinental permit that Bush had earlier agreed to.
So that was some success, but it's a hard road here. There's the resistance, the lines are drawn, the resistance is here at Standing Rock. Could you talk about how you see this struggle? What is this about? What's the heart of the matter here?
If we're going to talk about the heart of the matter, it comes down to the sacredness of the water and the ability of people to reconnect and realign their thinking and their lifestyle to understand what sacred is and why we call it sacred water. Because when they understand that, then they understand that we will not stand down.
Are you surprised at the level of brutality that was turned against the water protectors, the willingness to send dogs in to cover people with spray and gas? How do you respond to that?
Initially, I was shocked. This is the 21st century, and if I'm not right, I'm in the United States of America, where religious freedoms and civil rights, I had once believed, were guaranteed to all people. I have just recently learned that in North Dakota, those rights and those laws do not apply to the law enforcement that have taken the side of the oil company and have bent every rule and broken the laws that people have worked for generations to create and to instill in our Constitution to provide the safety of our free speech. I mean, the guarantee, actually, of our free speech and the guarantee that we could practice our religion freely. That astounds me. I feel like we're not in America anymore, and that corporate rule is corporate rule, and the citizens, our rights are being trampled over. So I want everybody to understand that we as humans are being attacked by corporations who would rather earn money by pushing oil through a pipeline than earn respect by standing up for human rights, our inherent right for clean water.
This is Dennis Berenstein. I'm also here with our good friend, Tony Gonzalez of the American Indian Movement West. Tony.
Thank you, Dennis. And Miss Angel, I wanted to express my sadness as well with what's happening here in North Dakota. Myself as a Vietnam veteran, and I know a lot of our peoples are veterans from the different wars that this country took us into. And many of our people stepped up to be a part of that, and yet our rights are being trampled in that regard. And it's becoming even more complex now with the pending decision by Obama now to approve the Army Corps engineers to begin the digging. And yet there's treaties that have to be addressed that are being neglected. 1851 treaty, 1868, what can you tell us of your people's concern about those violations of treaties?
Those are unresolved issues. They're very complex from a lawyer's point of view, but from a common person's point of view, let's say my point of view, the thing that is grossly lacking is the honor and the integrity of our government to keep their word, to say that they are going to sign a treaty with us, and then to go and completely disregard everything that they have written down is devastating. It's treacherous. It's everything that you can, it's dishonest, basically. The government is being very dishonest. They're being unjust. They're not keeping their word. And I'm a person who doesn't like to say bad things about people, so those words that I need to share with you, I can't even say them. But if the government were to honor the 1851 treaty and the 1876 treaty, our waters would be clean. Our people could carry on living a lifestyle connected to the earth without any interruption from outside. We could live freely, pray freely, have clean water. Our children would understand a relationship to land, and our animals, you know, they wouldn't be in any danger. But it clearly comes from a lack of respect for their own treaties that they signed with Native Americans.
One of the, if you could say, positive parts of this is the role that young people are playing in the resistance. We have seen some very courageous young people leading the way. Could you talk about the role of young people and how that makes you feel?
I'm going to speak as a mother, because when we carry a child, we slowly fall in love with that child. And we carry that child in water, in sacred water. That's what we carry our children in. And when they're born, we give them water, sacred water, so that they can thrive. Every creation made by Creator on this planet is sustained by water. So that's, first of all, the sacredness of water. So when you come from that background and having carried this sacred being in your womb for 9 months, falling in love with it, devoting your life to make sure that it's protected, that it's provided for, and then the lifespan of that youth, the teachings we give that youth, the understanding that they give to each other, the understanding that they are sacred, is a slow process that is gained between the relationship between the adults and the child. So when they become able to speak on their own, which is happening, they understand what is just and what is right. And they were the ones on the Standing Rock Reservation, the youth had gathered and said, Dapple is going to destroy our water. Dapple, when that pipeline breaks, is going to make the water dirty for everybody. It's going to contaminate it. So the youth movement was really the beginning of all of this, because there isn't a parent in the world who's going to let their youth go out alone and battle a corporation. So when they decided that it was wrong and that they needed to stand up, they stood up in unity, and they stood up in truth, and they stood up in solidarity. And when they did that, it motivated, it inspired not only one nation, but over 300 tribal indigenous nations to stand with them. So they are our future leaders, and they took that very first step to show what kind of leadership America needs.
They took many steps, didn't they? They ran across the country to call attention to what's going on here. And that commitment, I guess that deep, deep commitment by the young, caught all of our attention, got all of us inspired. And I guess they will lead this movement.
Most recently, in a meeting less than a week ago, they let their concerns be heard. And it was very simple. We are not going to be parents and babysitters of the people around us. We are not going to be pulled from one group to another group. We are going to stand in unity. We are going to continue to lead this group, and we want the women to follow us and the men to follow them. That is how we are going to move in our next, in all of our actions. So that was a directive to us to listen to them, because they are wiser than us, and they are the leaders.
And it's really important for me to ask this. Forgive me if it brings back some of the hurt, but the way in which the youth were attacked, the horses were attacked, the way in which people were corralled, literally written on their bodies, it's hard to understand what inspires this brutality. How can you help us understand this and react to it in a way that we're not so angry that we can't do, that we can't move?
When you put your mind, your heart, and your hands together, and you use the love that you were taught, the love that you carry in your heart, the soul force, when it's used to protect the sacred, there isn't any fear. What they had done to us when we were in prayer is atrocious, but it's also forgivable. I don't stand here in hate. I stand here in love, but I stand and I will not move. I will not back down. And I ask anyone who has love, who has forgiveness, who understands standing in unity against a corporation without moving, even if it's in silent prayer, I wish that you would come and stand with us, because we do not need anger. We have enough anger in the world. We need love.
Thank you so much for speaking with us here. And I think Tony has a question for you.
Thank you, Dennis. Miss Angel, your peoples in Rosebud and in that area have stories of the black snake. And now this black snake is here, and it's going to attack the water and the peoples. Can you share the story, the myth of this black snake, the prophecy?
It's a simple story, actually. Mm-hmm. And just saying the word black snake and saying the word prophecy and then saying the word tribal people doesn't leave much to the imagination. And what it did was it prepared us that this time would come. And when this time is here, is when we gather, is when we have to stand together, and when we have to not move from fear, from anger, all of those things that normal people react that would break us up, we need to move away from them, because this black snake, it's here. And so we need to stand stronger in the strongest prayer we know how, and hang on to one another and stand in front of it, because that's the only way it's going to be stopped.
Could you recount your journey to the river with the sacred mission, if you will, sacred mission to the river, in which you were, shall we say, empowered by the youth to do this work?
On October 27th, 2016, at a place that we call Sacred Ground, we had set up a north camp, a treaty camp, if you will, on unceded treaty territory, in essence, our ancestral land. On that land, we established a prayer camp, a ceremonial camp. And on that morning, the sheriff came down and said, move your vehicles to clear the road. Move your vehicles to clear the road.